the actual banning, the actual history of book banning. Like, you are thrown in jail for trying to sell this book, trying to get it. They burn these books. Actual banning. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Do you want to hear about the first book ever banned in the United States?
I'd love to.
I can see a case in which some states could ban a book like Fourth Wing. 1954, Mickey Mouse comics were banned in East Berlin because Mickey was said to be an anti-red rebel.
What the fuck?
Go Disney. Welcome, welcome everyone to the Tutor Realm podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we're talking about book banning. Now, this is a video topic that we touched upon quite a while ago with Thomas as well. If you're interested, you can check that out down below. You think we'll actually link it?
We'll link it.
We'll remember below. This time.
Yes.
We don't always link the things that we say we're going to link, but this time we'll do it. I hope.
Look at that. No, Nick's got us. Editor Nick. Yeah.
In that video, we mostly talked about the colloquial understanding of the word book banning in America. When people talk about book banning today in America, it is more about the curation of books in school libraries. So not, oh, this book cannot be sold. It's just, hey, the school districts, whatever counties, will actually remove books. Say like, hey, this book is not appropriate in elementary school or middle school or even high school. Not allowed, or vice versa, or it requires parental permission to read. All of those things. That is what is typically talked about when you look at the ADL's list of top 10 banned books of 2024. They're not banned. You can still buy them. You can still get them at the local library. They're just not in all schools. So that is not what we're particularly going to be talking about today. Today we're going to be talking about, at least most of my research, is the actual banning, the actual history of book banning. Like, you are thrown in jail for trying to sell this book, trying to get it. They burn these books. Actual banning. That's what we're going to be talking about today. I did a lot of research mostly into the history of United States book banning, but did a cursory global look of how that's gone along. I found some stuff very interesting and noteworthy.
That's great, because I went more global. Awesome. And then had some U.S. stuff thrown in there. But I went more historically of what happened with book burnings and book bannings. What did this look like thousands of years ago versus today? That kind of stuff. And I found some cool, neat facts that I never knew before. I'm saying
wonderful.
Cool and book burning next to each other doesn't sound good. But
yeah, real neat.
Yeah, real neat. Now, a lot of fun stuff. So this will be a discussion, like you said, perfectly said, on like the actual book banning hey, not allowed to read this either via government, via force, something of that sort. So yeah, I think we define that well enough of book banning. Book banning comes from three sources, right? It's through via politics, religion, morality, ethic, that kind of sphere. That's why books will be banned in general. There's somebody sees the books there as evil, as obscene, as insert anything. There's plenty of reasons for it, as trying to quell opposition. It goes on and on. So what did you find with your research and wanted to begin? Did you want to start more global and looking back to where this began, or did you want to start a little bit more narrow?
Well, I did want to just out of the gate talk about at least my understanding of the different types of book ban, just go quickly over of at least my understanding of the different types and to what degree they should be, what degree of concern, what's the hierarchy of concern for these things.
Okay, yep.
So in my opinion, there's kind of three different types of book banning talked about, like, that is relevant to today. And it's first and the most extreme being book banning of the government does not allow you to actually purchase, own, sell this book. That's the most extreme version. The second of severity to me is post-death book editing. So when a book is, maybe it's not necessarily governmental, but through some reason of objectionable means, the book is, as it was, is no longer in print. and things are removed and changed and altered. To me, that is a type of like, yeah, technically the book still exists, but you have removed after the author's death. Like, to me, it's a softer form of banning and less severity, but
more of an erasure of the actual original.
Yeah. Yes. So that's another level of severity. And then lastly is the thing we briefly talked about is book curation. So whether something should be allowed in a local public library, whether something should be allowed in a school library, at what age, all those kind of things. All of them, I believe, are important to talk about. Those are all very relevant conversations to have, but I just wanted to put those in the order of importance.
And separating categories like that makes sense, because we're talking mostly on the first one, but
banning or removal from government, banning or removal from basically public sector and just publishers. To give examples for that is Richard Bachman's books. Many of them, but most particularly, I've talked about this before, of like my deepest fascination books that I very much want to get my hands on just because I'm fascinated by it. But Richard Bachman, the pseudonym of Stephen King, when he was just going, he's on top of the world. He's going, hey, I want to figure out, am I a successful author because I'm famous at this point? Or can I actually write a good book? So he came up, he didn't tell his publishers, he came up with a fake name, Richard Bachman, and wrote books to publish to see if he just could. And he did. And he became actually a pretty well-known author as Richard Bachman. These books sold pretty darn well. One of those books was called Rage, and this was pulled from publication by King and also Publishing House because it was directly linked to, I believe, 4 mass shootings in the United States. Both direct copies and inspirations mentioned in manifestos, the book being found in the kid's locker. At that point, the publisher and King himself pulled the printing of that book. As of now, today, you want to go buy Richard Bachman's book, Rage? You're going to have a hard time. Like, it is actually very hard to do. And if you can find it, it's going to be expensive. There's not many of those books around. So, to some degree, that's a soft form of censorship, even though it is self-censorship. But what is the end result? I cannot buy that book. I do not have access to said book. It is hard to, there are barriers in the way. So that's an instance of the more private sector banning their own books.
And all, yeah, that's also an instance where how much, let's start very narrow there and say how much control should an author have in banning their own book?
Yeah.
Right.
If anyone's going to have authority, probably the author. if anyone has a say.
You own it, right?
You own it. If the author doesn't want to publish their book anymore, I don't think they should have to. Like, I'm not, when I'm talking about this, I'm not against King doing that. He has full right to do so. He doesn't have, and if I were in his shoes, I'd probably feel something similar. So I am not blaming him. I am not saying that is a negative thing of him to do, but end result being, books are not available to be read. That's all.
You know what should not be banned is one of my favorite world building sites, Rich, and that's World Anvil. Okay, worldanvil.com. Go check out World Anvil if you want to craft a book, play a D&D campaign, map out your characters, any sort of tool you need to have fun on the game board or in your book board, if that makes sense. Whatever you need to do, it has your needs and it's for free. If you want to upgrade and get all of their additional features, there's a 50% discount you can use using the code RAMBLE. That's it, RAMBLE.
But yeah, just go ahead, check them out. If you really want a great tool to be able to create family lineages and trees and be able to map all these things, map the web of character interactions, and also building your fantasy map for both D&D and also your own fantasy novel, that stuff is free.
Check it in the description below.
Check it out.
Do it. Why not? It's not banned either.
It isn't banned.
Wait, we should say it is banned so that people are more enticed to go. It could be banned soon.
Oh, no.
Oh,
you better click the link before it gets banned.
Before it's too late. All right, back to the episode. A lot of this video is going to be stuff that we researched and looked into to let you know we might get some stuff wrong here because I'm going to give a story as well that I just learned. Sorry if we don't get all the details completely accurate. We will if people correct us in the comments, we'll put down below of like big correction stuff, because I don't want to get big stuff wrong.
Yeah.
Because here's a story I just learned that's a little similar to that.
Ooh, let it on.
That is an own author wanting to essentially ban their own works. Okay. I never heard about this, but in August of 1963, just a few months before C.S. Lewis resigned from Cambridge, as his rooms were being cleared, he gave specific instructions to burn his unfinished fragments and manuscripts. Now, for King, this is more commonplace, because anything that was early drafts or incomplete works that he wasn't finishing, he wanted to get rid of it. He didn't.
King or Lewis?
Oh, sorry. C.S. Lewis. Okay. Sorry, I might have said King because it was in my head for what you said. Yeah, C.S. Lewis, he would like to do that with his incomplete drafts. That was seemingly typical. Mm-hmm. And so there was a bonfire, and following C.S. Lewis's death shortly after, his brother Warren reportedly carried out the instructions and burned many of his brother's papers in a three-day bonfire. There was a lot of papers. C.S. Lewis's instructions were, hey, anything unfinished, like obviously I'm not going to publish it, so please get rid of. The estate's gardener, Fred Paxford, was the one overseeing the fire. Okay, now on the third day, literary executor Walter Hooper arrived at C.S. Lewis's home on the final day of the bonfire and rescued a 64-page manuscript from the flames. He published that manuscript in 1977 under the title The Dark Tower, a book apparently intended to be part of C.S. Lewis's space trilogy. Now, a quick thing about that. Some people speculate, is this Walter Hooper story completely fabricated? Did this actually happen? Hooper claims, nope, this is exactly the story that happened. C.S. Lewis is on the title, and apparently a manuscript that C.S. Lewis intended to never be published was then published in this form, in an incomplete form, and is now available. In a case where the author didn't
explicitly said
not to. So that's another case of the author going, hey, I wrote something, I don't want it, I want to burn it, but now it's everywhere.
If any type of censorship should be permissible, self-censorship. You were allowed to not speak. Because to me, at least, I see it as you publishing a book is you speaking. If you publish it and you send it out to the world, you can't unring that bell.
Yeah.
But you should have control over what you say. The fact that someone posthumously publishes a work that C.S. Lewis has not signed off on, he was not prepared, I do find that really wrong. I wouldn't wonder. There's a similar thing with, I don't want to get in trouble with lawyers, because...
Oh, no. Scott, no.
Scott.
You know how many times
our lawyer friend doesn't like me mentioning this, so I will caveat
don't,
it.
I know what you're going to say.
I know.
He always yells at you. Don't...
He does yell at me, but guess what? I've learned how to play the YouTube game. Caveats. Giving, plenty of outs. I'm not making declarative statements.
By the way, you're still the only one I get this information from. I still haven't looked into this.
Okay,
I just assume you're correct. I'm like, man, how wrong is that?
I love this relationship. It's wonderful.
whatever you tell me. Okay.
But it's very similar to the idea that Harper Lee. Yeah. So the situation with Harper Lee. Harper Lee wrote To Kill a Mockingbird, and basically kind of a one-hit wonder if she wrote one of the best-selling novels of all time.
Hey, Richard, is this an opinion of yours?
Right now, this is not opinion. I will let you know when opinion comes in.
Okay.
I am setting the stage.
Only reason we joke about this is we talked about it like an episode, I don't know, however many episodes ago.
I made some declarative statements that I could be held liable.
Which my dumbass is loud and long going like, oh, that's interesting, Rich. Then we get the call going like, hey, you probably can't say that.
Yes.
Apparently. But I don't like that fact, though, like that we have to think about that now when we're speaking on here. I don't like that feeling.
I am not a fan of it. No. But
just say it.
Whatever.
No, don't even caveat. Get in trouble.
No, I'm going to do our buddy proud. But anyway, the actual facts of it, Harper Lee published one of the best-selling novels of all time, To Kill a Mockingbird. It's read in every school across the world. Sold so much money. She made a lot of money from it. But the book that she tried to publish before that novel was a novel that takes place, same characters, but in the future. And that novel just didn't get picked up. And after it was rejected by publishers, she then wrote To Kill a Mockingbird, like taking that story and putting it back in time a little bit longer. And that's the one that got published. So she had this fully written book that never got it past publishers. And people wanted to publish it. And it's like, hey, look, it's basically a sequel, a chronological sequel to The Kill Mockingbird. Everyone said, hey, you should publish it. You should publish it. She said, no, I don't want to publish it. And all the way through her entire life, didn't want it published, kept it locked away. Then apparently on her deathbed.
This isn't opinion time yet?
Now we're at opinion time. We are at opinion time. On her deathbed, yeah. She authorized the publishing of her book, the previous book. Because I didn't prepare this one. It just popped in my head. I'm trying to remember the name of the book. But you can look it up. It's the only other book by Harper Lee you're going to find. Basically, on her deathbed, she approved that this book be published. And her lawyer published the book on her behalf as she authorized it. Opinion time. I speculate. I don't know if I buy completely that she signed off on that in her deathbed in full conscience. I throw that into question. I would like that investigated. I want to know more. I theorize that the lawyer just published it to make a buck. That's my opinion. I have no substantial evidence for that, but it's what I believe.
You know, Scott's still going to yell at you.
Just in the same vein that I believe that, you know, Benjamin Franklin was a time traveler.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Okay, connecting another absurd theory you have. That's good.
Yeah, there you go.
I will say,
I believe these two things.
That's
one
good.
Is maybe more plausible than the other.
We can't get sued for that, right?
We can't.
We're watching this in a court. Like, oh, fuck, Rich. Fuck. No, you said the wrong word there. No. Oh, you doubled down. Austin, you encouraged him. What are you doing?
Anyway.
Yeah.
It's very similar vein. I, in both cases, if the lawyer did just forge this Harper Lee signature, if he actually did do it without her explicit permission, I find that reprehensible in the same vein of C.S. Lewis publishing his work that he did not sign off of. He explicitly said, do not like burn all these things. I didn't finish it. I don't want it published out to the world.
Oh, I'm definitely like that being the case, 100% with you of C.S. Lewis's whatever your wishes is, Harper Lee, whatever the actual truth is, the what did they want to do on their deathbed and was the request, what was in your will, follow that. I mean, especially when it's to something that is their story, their work. It's
especially a lot more relevant for stories that rather than maybe a memoir or journals that is like historically relevant. Like if it's historically relevant, I can see the argument behind like, no, this is relevant to history.
Can I make a steel man this in a way?
Sure.
Like, would it be wrong? So would it be wrong that, let's say, always use the H word, Adolf Hitler.
Yes.
Goes, hey, tells the SS or whoever is there, burn all my stuff. Like, I don't want evidence of this, of this, of this, of this. And it's like, okay, let's say Hitler wrote it. Maybe it was one of he wrote letters, I think like sent three letters out of his will, whatever it was, before he died in the final days, but told the SS officer, burn this. But is there a duty to the public domain? Is there a duty to that individual to go, you want me to burn something? But even if that person completely wrote it and it's theirs, is it more valuable to historicity? Is it more valuable? And also the person being the worst person, like Hitler, being an evil person, does that make it easier to go, hey, disregard evil person? And
I would say so. I think historical relevance does come into play at that point. But funny you should mention that. Of actual banned books.
Yes.
There are actually many memoirs and diaries from SS officers that are not allowed to be sold, and most copies were removed and destroyed and kept in museums. Same thing with some texts from Hitler's written other things other than Mein Kampf.
Well,
those are kept in a museum. They are not allowed to be owned by a public individual.
Copies of the book? Yeah.
Copies
well,
of his
I
text.
Know. So I was looking into this Mein Kampf, for example. Specific countries have it banned. So I believe Austria currently has it banned. Yeah. I believe Russia has it banned. I believe there's other countries and areas as well. You can look around and it's banned in certain parts. In Germany, it's not banned, but it's more
because it's literally taught. Like you have to
learn your history, etc. Yeah. But
it's part of the history textbook.
But don't, I briefly looked at that, so take with a grain, so I don't know all the other countries. However, there are books like that that are banned in the modern day. And when you're talking about that and saying the SS or is that the United States, or are you talking about globally?
I am referencing specifically the United States.
So the U.S. has those banned.
Yes.
So
Sell it. Okay. Other copies were destroyed, but they are kept in museums.
Really?
Okay. So the public can see them. You can go see them, but they're not allowed to be publicly sold. There's this similar thing with books like the Anarchist Cookbook, which is a whole complicated mess of I struggle to understand the actual legality around it. It is not illegal to own, per se. You will not be thrown in prison for having a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook. However, to actually sell a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook requires some more scrutiny and is very difficult to actually buy one. There are certain editions of the Anarchist Cookbook that have the more pertinent things removed from them. So if you go into Amazon right now and you wanted to buy the Anarchist Cookbook, you will find censored versions of it for sale, but there are actual recipes in there, how to build actual bombs, different chemical weapons and things that the US government does not allow you to just easily sell. So you have to get a license to be able to sell these kind of books. And so take that with a grain of salt, but it actually is very easy to buy if you just like go on tour.
I feel a little icky like saying that on here just because it's a book that... That's interesting because the book literally just shows you how to create bombs, right?
Yeah.
For the most
part. And a bunch of different weapons and things like that.
Weapons and things like that. And so I do know that the author who wrote that then later in their life became religious and spent their life like atoning it and regretting writing the book. Mm-hmm. Another one of those cases where the author is looking at their own work and wants it removed or something of the sort. I know it's banned in Australia. And I'm sure it's banned in other places, but Australia, I think, has a harsh ban on it, like since 1985. Some, again, asterisks of in case.
Yeah.
There's some, because some, there's probably some more details there. However,
there's more details of, is it banned to sell? Is it illegal to sell? Is it illegal to own? There's complications there. You can actually get it under certain circumstances if you get a license for it. Mm-hmm. Plenty of that stuff. Along the same lines, the government also has banned many different memoirs from... different military and intelligence officers this is different than actual classified material, because classified material is just not allowed. That is a type of banning, but it's the more commonly understood thing of where it just won't allow to be published. Mm-hmm. However, there are certain memoirs that the information is declassified. However, it is of a certain sensitive nature where the government does not allow them to be published. So there is gray area around those type of deals. So plenty of memoirs are banned by the U.S. government to be published in that vein. So there are actual books banned in the United States. However, they are few and far between in general.
It seems like there's a lot to explain. So it's memoirs that were once written that were classified but are now declassified, and it's just so it seems like there's a string to explain there, that is it technically
there are complicated not allowed, it's, there are it complicated seems complex, reasons yeah. why they won't be wide the difference between like widely distributed and limitedly distributed. Like some of these memoirs are allowed to be like you were allowed to read it if within certain contexts, but won't be published on Amazon type of deal.
For the colloquial sense, though, you write a book, you can publish it. Like there's no restrictions there. It's more so these more...
If you have ever worked for the intelligence agency...
Then there's attached national security, stuff like that, yeah.
No, anything you publish needs to go past them. Mm. They need to actually approve your writings in case you slip something in there.
Right.
So that's one level censorship. But that's the stuff today.
Yes. So,
for the most part, I think most people understand, like, hey, Anarchist Cookbook being banned. All right, fine. And most people, I don't think, won't object to too many of the books that are banned in the United States today. And again, I'm I was more laser focused in on the United States.
Well, there's so I didn't look into every country, but for example, I looked up the U.S. and couldn't find those examples. So I hadn't heard of those examples before. But you have other countries that ban stuff. I've already mentioned, like, Australia had this book banned. Are you going to complain over the anarchist cookbook? That being, you know, there's degrees where people will be more outraged about something, and that's a conversation we could have later here as well.
Do you want to hear about Do you want to hear about the first book ever banned in the United States?
I'd love to.
Yes. The first recognized instance of book banning in the United States is Thomas Morton's New English Canon or New Canon pub. I'm terrible with names. Apologies with the pronunciation. This was published in Amsterdam in 1637. This basically this went over the history of. It's a book in three volumes that goes over the history, beliefs, and practices of the Native Americans and treatment in the New World at the hands of the Puritans. And basically in the United States, it was then banned in, 1640s-ish. Basically, Morton was arrested in Boston, returned to North America, but Puritans actually banned the sale and ownership of that book and arrested Morton for it. That is the first recognized
U.S. ban.
U.S. book banning.
Well, plenty the U.S. one didn't exist. The first
colonial, United States colonial
U.S.
territory.
Was not a thing for another 100 plus years. So yes. But I get what you mean.
Yes.
That area, the same... land area.
Geographical area. But however, that's the first recognized Northern American book ban.
I was looking more globally, and do you want to know the first ever book burnings?
I think I know it, but please tell everyone else.
Now, the first recorded one, this is not confirmed, but this one is the first recorded one that we have, is according to the Hebrew Bible, in the 7th century BCE, King Jehoiakim of Judah burned part of a scroll that Baruch ben Neriah had written at Prophet Jeremiah's dictation. So there was a reference that there was a burning in the Hebrew Bible. Mm. However, that's like a reference, and it's a biblical Hebrew, you know, a religious text. So that aside, the first recorded one that we do have is the earliest government book burning. This is the one I was interested in too, because that one seemed to be that one was a king in a biblical text, and that some people will disagree, and there will be biblical or religious scholars that can disagree. This one is more a government that was recorded as well. It was in 213 BCE. Qin Shi Huang, the first emperor of the Qin dynasty, ordered the burning of books and burying of scholars. And in 210 BCE, he supposedly ordered the premature burial of 460 Confucian scholars in order to stay on his throne. Now, the burning is more confirmed. The burning of the books is confirmed. The scholars is possibly hearsay, possibly did not happen, but it was referred. It could have been people that were making the ruler look out worse than the ruler was because of this. Yeah. So that keeping that aside, the thing, though, that is more certain is that the event caused the loss of a lot of philosophical treaties of the 100 schools of thought, which in China, ancient China, is a lot of your things that have to deal with agriculture, legalism, etc. Philosophical texts in ancient China. But yes, so Qin Shi Huang, the first emperor of the Qin dynasty, that was the first recorded governmental book burning that we can look back to. Of course, there's probably some before, but we just don't have a good historical record of this.
There's also it's again not confirmed, but it is told about that not all of them were burned. Apparently, that a single copy of each of the books that were burned and destroyed were kept by the emperor, but then destroyed after his death, with the idea, with his idea being that if he could control the history, remove it, then that history starts with him, and that he would be the beginning of history.
Mm.
That was at least
the thought,
supposed reasoning behind it.
Mm.
Yeah, I did also look that up. It feels good to actually have research things.
Doesn't it? Yes.
Yeah, I like it.
It is neat. Yeah. So from that, did you look at any other burnings throughout history or book bannings, or are you focused again back to more?
I focused mostly America, but I did find it noteworthy. I know other people will know this, And I'm probably learned it in school and subsequently forgot about it. But I thought it was very interesting that the Roman Emperor Caligula actually opposed the reading of the Odyssey and actually banned the Odyssey from being read because it was a representation of Greek freedom. I thought that was dangerous. Another thing to add on Caligula being just not the best Roman emperor. So I thought that was interesting, but I have a big long timeline of
banning. God, that's like, a lot of notes.
Most of these notes are like notable, because there's too many to actually count, but this is a notable event from the beginning to like modern day different book bannings across the world, like pulling things out at random. Like 1954, Mickey Mouse comics were banned in East Berlin because Mickey was said to be an anti-red rebel.
What the fuck?
Go Disney. I can't say that word on air. 1970.
Wait, the Mickey Mouse is banned
in East Berlin.
That's great.
1970, the book titled, I cannot say the full name, White N-Word of America, a political tract about Quebec's politics and society, was written by Pierre, terrible with French, Valeris while he was in jail. The book was confiscated when the writer was accused of sedition. An edition was published in France and was not allowed in Canada. U.S. edition was published in English in 1971, but not allowed in Canada. I mean, there's novels by Ernest Hemingway was banned, banned in Germany, in Ireland, in Italy.
Voltaire.
In the 1930s to 60s, Voltaire also. My lord.
Well, Rich, we said in the title we would explain all of book burning and banning.
Yeah. I mean,
so we must go through all of the notes.
Oh my god!
I am very curious to hear some more. I say fun using that word.
Robinson Crusoe.
Yep, tell me.
famous story as placed on the Index Librum by the Spanish Catholic Church. Galileo's theories were banned by the Catholic Church as well. Like, Catholic Church is on a lot of these. Like, you want... Yeah, a lot of them are governments, but a lot of them were the Catholic Church.
Yeah, that goes back to... It's religious or governments were typically... Obviously, wherever the most amount of book banning could actually be coerced and implemented.
Well,
so
the
for
only
a long
one
time
with the authority and the power to
has
actually
the
do something
has the ability to do it, because for example I was looking into, there was Christian and then Muslim and then Jewish. I looked up all sorts of religious types of book burnings and bannings, and then also more throughout history of seeing that this one was, if any of these are to be funny, like the Mickey Mouse ones. That's,
isn't that great?
Mickey Mouse, okay.
Mickey Mouse fighting the good old commies. Yeah, I love it.
Is that Mickey? That's Mickey. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
That's more Goofy. Whatever.
Yeah. Wait, which one's Mickey?
No, it's the same, but Goofy's like lower pitch.
Yeah. That was it.
Yup. Yup.
Mickey. Mickey, I think you're going to. There's a bit there somewhere. Yeah, this was maybe the most funny one I found out, because we have to find some humor in burnings and bannings, right? So during the 18th century, the works of French philosopher and writer Voltaire were repeatedly burned by government officials in the kingdoms of France and Prussia. It's not the funny part yet. Okay. In 1734, the publications of his Letters Philosophiques in the city of Rouen led to a public outcry, as it was seen as an attack against the ancient regime of France. In response, the French authorities ordered copies of the book to be publicly confiscated and burnt, and Voltaire was forced to flee Paris. Okay, now here's the part that made me go like, this is so petty. In 1751, King of Prussia Frederick the Great ordered a pamphlet written by Voltaire titled Dr. Acaecia to be publicly burnt, as is insulted Pierre-Louis Maupetus, the president of the Prussian Academy of the Sciences in Berlin, of whom Frederick was a significant patron. So basically, he banned a dude's book because it insulted his buddy. And it's a little funny because...
You gotta respect it.
On the one hand, it's like, hey, you're banning books, you're burning stuff, what are you doing? On the other hand, I'm like, the loyalty. You know?
I'm with you.
It's like, you know... It's how you could justify so many things if it's like, hey, it's my mom.
Also,
hey, it's my buddy.
Also, Frederick the Great is known as one of the best generals of all. of all time, like military leaders of like military schools of thought. So like I'm willing to simp for him.
It's okay. So it's like, so it's even gone down to the petty level of, hey, you wrote something that insults someone that they're a patron to or a buddy.
Yeah.
Even happens to that. Basically, if you're in a position of authority in any way, the ability then comes to to ban or strike down on books. And now, even just as much as, because we're given obvious examples of the bans that did happen, and there's a bunch of, again, Christian, Muslim, and Jewish history that looked up. I'll give some information as we talk, as it comes up and is relevant. But I thought it was unique because as much as I saw there was the book burning, you can also pick, possibly cherry pick moments as well, where, for example, when Spain was conquistadoring and coming to the Americas, so numerous books found by the Spanish in Yucatan were burnt, and they were basically, the quote from Dalanda, Dalanda in 1562 wrote, "We found a large number of books in these characters, and as they contain nothing in which were not to be seen as superstition and lies of the devil, we burned them all, which they, the Mayan, regretted to an amazing degree and which caused them much affliction." Now, there's cases like that where there's book banning in the Americas. However, there was opposition from like a Catholic friar, Bartolomeo de las Casas. And so despite this opposition from this Catholic friar who was saying, hey, we shouldn't burn this stuff, it was still burnt. So you'll find even within governments or religions, you'll still find when the book burnings or bannings were. The holidays are coming up fast, and it's time to shop, but actually have some fun doing it.
Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else.
On uncommongoods.com, they provide art, games, books, DIY kits, home accents, and all sorts of accessories. What makes them unique is that about half of their assortment is handmade by independent artists and artisans.
Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. For moms, dads, teens, from book lovers to history buffs, to anyone who hit their quarter-life crisis and started running marathons.
Excuse me. Okay, well, that's my better half, Nicole. She's one of those marathon runners, and I got her a gift from the site. I ordered this custom metal holder for all the races she completes, where there's also a place to put her personal records on there. I'd never seen custom-built case like this before, and so I got her the gift, and I'm gonna surprise her with it.
Yeah. Hey, every time you purchase something from Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Also, every purchase you make, Uncommon Goods gives $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice.
So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off of your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/2toramble. That's uncommongoods.com/2toramble for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. Happening, there was opposition, but as history is written, we see the result of like whatever the authority was. So even though there was opposition from this Catholic friar, and I'm sure other religious, other Catholics, other like Muslims, insert whatever religion there, even though there was probably opposition, which one won out was like whoever had the ultimate say. And yep. In this case, so that they were burnt there. And I mean, also the case of this.
There's a reason the Catholic Church is not just about book burning, like throughout history. They've also, it is relevant to bring up of like a lot of historical texts and a bunch of knowledge through history is kept and preserved by the Catholic Church. So they haven't always banned everything that disagrees with them. Like they actually have preserved many things as well.
Yeah.
Depending on the time frame throughout their existence.
Yeah, history is always one of my favorite subjects in school was history. I even like looking into this and finding more stuff. It's always hard because it's difficult because you always kind of go in with what is the project? What's the title of what we're doing now? So we're looking at the book banning. I didn't look anything into like the book saving. See, we could talk. Sure. I know just colloquial. I know this from the zeitgeist because in Nazi Germany
that would be a very interesting subject to research on its own of how. Are there what books around today were narrowly saved from different burnings or eliminations? What books barely survived?
You have thousands of stories from Nazi Germany of books and art being saved. You had the Minutemen, was it? And, and all these cases where art was going to be destroyed forever or lost forever, or this was going to be burnt, but people came together and saved important works from these burnings. So there's plenty of those cases. And I love talking about those because the optimist, the human spirit in me is like, let's go.
Yeah.
Save. But the, yeah, so there's a lot of cases here throughout history. We're not going to be able to cover it all. Maybe we can touch on, I'm curious of what you looked into when it came to more the legal lens of things, because I know you looked into, what I didn't look into was more, because again, I want more global and have some historical stuff to look at, but you narrowed down on some legal wording, obscenity laws in the U.S.
Yes. Before I get into that, I did want to reference the actual name of the book to give the example of, you know, government, the military actually banning some different memoirs. In 2010, so not that long ago, the U.S. Department of Defense bought and destroyed the entire first printing 9,500 copies of Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer's Operation Darkheart. The book focused on the war in Afghanistan, even though Schaefer had worked closely with military officials. When he was writing the manuscript, some feared the book would reveal military secrets. Schaefer's publishers, St. Marcin Press, did release a second printing, but it featured cuts and changes in the U.S. Department of Defense had ordered. The reason why that is more specifically relevant is that the first part of that, it's not written in a vacuum. Like, the first printing did go through, like, in general, there shouldn't be any classified material. People did go through that with a fine tooth comb.
Was there rigorous editing, and they did
the even through the first printing. That first printing wouldn't pass without being passed through several different people checking to make sure there's no classified material in it. Mm. So it didn't. However, somebody somewhere feared that they would reveal military secrets in a broader sense, maybe not specific classified information, but broader strategies and military strategies in general. That is probably the issue. And so after that, consideration was removed. So still happens today, which I do find interesting, of like the Department of Defense buying and then destroying the entire first printing of a guy's book. So that's,
hey, that
that's
means it sold well.
Yeah, but you can buy a heavily edited version. Hey, he got paid.
He's looking like, oh my God, it's a bestseller.
I sold all my books.
There's just no copies anywhere. Like, what happened? But sad story. I don't know the details beyond that, but that does seem like one of the cases with book banning in general is, hey, does the national security, the culture, the obscenity, the what, fill in your reason here, outweigh the badness of the book? And in this case, would that reveal military strategy? Would that be bad? Because the argument would be made, I'm sure, by Department of Defense is, well, this reveals strategy and our soldiers are at risk now because look at these things that are being revealed. And now
we don't want members, people in Afghanistan to learn some of our strategies that we implement, and they could adjust. So, yeah. Makes sense to me.
That would be the argument. And then I didn't get into the, I wish I got into the weeds of that stuff, because I need to go to libraries more often, because the internet did me dirty, because I was looking into what books has the U.S. banned, and I'm getting over and over again, no, it hasn't banned books. There's not really banned books. Like, oh,
no.
Dang.
No, there's a surprising amount.
My research was wrong. Wow. what else did you find?
So generally, when you're looking specifically at the actual United States of when we became a country, what was the law that mostly banned books? And it was mostly obscenity laws. The original obscenity laws in the United States that was last relevant a law was an English case via common law, 1868, Regina versus Hicklin. Basically, any material that tended to deprave and corrupt those whose minds are open to such immoral influences was deemed obscene and could be banned on that basis. Now, by that definition, many different books were banned. Mostly books that depicted sex or different assaults to cultural mores. The list is endless amount that fell under that law. However, there's a couple different court cases. The first United States case that actually superseded the English common law was a Roth versus United States Supreme Court case. Basically established, there's the Roth test. There are three qualifications that counted as like a a piece of work actually had to check all three categories to be counted as obscene. And I'll list them off here.
Okay.
So, A, the dominant theme of the material taken as a whole appeals to a prurient interest in sex. Prurient is excessive, basically excessive sexual interest.
Okay.
B, the material is patently offensive because it affronts contemporary community standards relating to the description or representation of sexual matters. That's a little bit more broad and more contextual to the region, because by contemporary community standards, that can differ from state to state, from city to city. Depends.
Okay.
C, the material is utterly without redeeming social value. This is 1957. That last qualification was actually modified by Miller versus California, which removed the utterly without redeeming social value test, and it was replaced with basically having without literacy, artistic, political, or scientific value.
I was, as you're reading this out loud, I'm going, oh, 100% ACOTAR's banned, right? There's no way it survives that law.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry. Now, do I think it brings artistic value? No, personally, you know, I didn't see the artistic value in it. We had a lot of fun reading that book and talking about it.
Artistic value.
Honestly, it brought an artful conversation.
Sure. Sure. Why not? We'll be generous.
I was doing the rules. Like, yep, it would have passed that. Yep. Oh, it's gone. By the time you got to the third one.
To give an example of book that was banned under obscenity laws, and there's an interesting story throughout all of it, is Memoirs of a Woman of Pleasure, or called Fanny Hill. It's an erotic novel by John Cleland that was published in London in 1748, and it was banned in the United States in 1821 in Massachusetts under obscenity law. Now, that actually, that stayed for a long time, and through the changing of the Roth test, which is still relevant today, however, that has been slightly altered. In reference to Memoirs of a Woman of Pleasure, there's a court case, a United States court case, the Memoirs versus Massachusetts Supreme Court case, basically clarified the holding on the Roth versus United States on obscenity, so basically upheld that. So this book was brought forward, again, it's like trying to appeal that under the First Amendment that should be allowed, but that case upheld Roth versus United States. Then, God, I went a little bit into details on this one. I apologize for going a little bit more legal.
No, this is great. I like this. This is more educational.
This book then was actually, it did eventually become unbanned in 1982.
Okay.
In 1966, it was unbanned, basically. The clarifying of holding on Roth versus the United States on obscenity, it was upheld as actual precedent on the law. However, it was determined that the book, Memoirs of a Woman of Pleasure, did not qualify under obscenity, that there was artistic value to it. So, oh my God. Little fun thing. I learned something new.
Yeah.
Did you know that the state actually has to issue a license at least in 1959, that the state had to issue licenses for movies to be shown in the state?
Oh, where?
Because the state of New York refused to issue a license for a motion picture called Lady Chatterley's Lover because it promoted adultery as acceptable. But Kingsley Intel Picture Corp versus Regents in 1959 deemed that went against the First Amendment, and therefore the states cannot refuse a license to show a movie deemed on the ideas thereupon. Like, just the fact that adultery is seen as partially could be acceptable is not enough of a justification to deny its access.
Okay. All right.
Oh, lastly, and I think is the most relevant to the current standing on obscenity laws, and why you're going to have a lot more conversations about book bannings and restrictions. So people ask, if you're going to ask today, like, why are schools allowed to remove books? And hasn't anyone challenged this under the First Amendment? Yes. Board of Education, Island Trees Union Free School District, number 26 versus Pico by Pico, is a court case where a list of 10 books was basically brought to attention by this committee that the school board issued and asking, like, hey, what is the recommendation of these books? Should they be banned? Should they be moved to a different section of the library? Should they need parental permission? All of those same details. And they gave their opinion that one of the books should be just removed. One should be with parental permission.
Okay.
But the rest are fine. Rest can be allowed.
Yep.
However, the school board looked at the committee and said, yeah, I know we actually established you to look into this, but we just say no to all of that. We're just going to remove them all. All nine. We're going to leave one. Like, one of them can stay, but we're just going to remove them all because it's vile, obscene.
The school board was like, yes, nonsense. We're going to remove them. Okay.
So they removed it. Many students actually came together and brought it to district court to under First Amendment violations. Went all the way to Supreme Court, where we now have basically they upheld that the school board does have broad powers on determining educational content, and the school board can actually remove books and determine what goes into a curriculum and the school libraries. However, there is a very specific case in this where. All right.
You got this.
Basically, the First Amendment imposes limitations upon a school board's exercise of its discretion to remove books from high school and junior high school libraries.
Okay.
So there is a restriction in here.
Yep.
The evidence room. So mainly it's based on political reasons. Do they simply disagree with the content of the book? Or is it deemed not educationally relevant, or is it obscene and not age appropriate? If those are the reasons, those are acceptable reasons to remove a book. This is Board of Education, Island Trees
Pico
Union
Pico one?
Versus Pico Pico.
Okay, gotcha.
So basically,
I don't know if we switched on to it. Okay,
gotcha. So this is the establishment of law where that if the students found that the school board was only banning these books because they disagreed with the content of it, just like we oppose the views in this book, especially political reasons, that would not be allowed. That is a violation of the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
So, however, the evidentiary materials before the district court must be construed favorably to the respondents given the procedural posture of this case. When so construed, those evidentiary materials raise a genuine issue of material fact as to whether petitioners, this being the school board, exceeded constitutional limitations in exercising their discretion to remove the books at issue from their school libraries. Respondents, the students, allegations in some of the evidentiary materials before the district court also fail to exclude the possibility that petitioners' removal procedures were highly irregular and ad hoc. The antithesis of the procedures might end to lay suspicions regarding the petitioner's motivation. So you have to determine what is the motivation for why those books are removed. If you can determine that a book was removed solely due to they disagreed with the content and they didn't have a specific reason, mainly on age and basically age appropriateness or academic validity. Those are the tests today. And so that is why we have current book removals, curation, bannings, however you want to call it. But that is the current standing law on school book bannings.
Bravo. You did great.
Yeah.
That was.
So obscenity laws are interesting.
Yes. I learned a lot there.
But basically, if you want the example, the 1966 or the first one is 1957.
Yep.
The establishment of obscenity laws basically unbanned a lot of books because it made obscenity far more specific. Before that, it was basically just, I find it obscene. And then there we go. Book is banned. And that's all you took. Then now it's like, oh, you actually have to go through these three categories. Does it match these qualifications? Then a state can ban it. And then lastly, it basically opened up to it's allowed to be sold in most contexts. But technically, state can still ban books under current obscenity laws. Just many don't.
This is throwing me back to college because I had a class on, it was more of a legal, it was a legal class, forget the name of it, but it was a lot of more free speech.
Yeah.
And that that overlaps a lot with these obscenity laws. What could you actually say out loud? Now, writing, I'm sure, is treated a little differently because if we were to talk about free speech laws, at least here in the U.S., famous cases like Brandenburg v. Ohio with the KKK who were burning crosses, doing all sorts of whatever they were saying.
Yep.
And then free speech was it showed that their speech was allowed and here's why, and that the reason for the current free speech standard that I think is still used on Brandenburg v. Ohio, as far as my remembering back from college, is because basically if the speech that you say would produce imminent lawless action, and it's likely to produce imminent lawless action. That was like the intention as well. But basically, imminent lawless action and violence.
Calls to action are not under the First Amendment, and including obscenity laws, which is just the more broad, interesting topic that I think most people will be more disagreeing, because like one person's obscenity is another person's Tuesday night, you know?
Yeah, that's where the gray area is, because I think, okay, what's the thing 100% of people should agree on is anything with children depicted in the way that we do not ever want children depicted, you know? And that's obviously a case where everybody can agree, hey, I don't think we should have videos. I don't think we should have books with children. So
no, everybody's there is some stuff of
the conversation.
Not, I'm not with the free speech absolute stuff, like everything should be allowed. No, there's some lines that I want the big hand of the government not allow child exploitation of that type of material. No, I want that removed in every single person that produces or participates under the prison.
Point of that, so something that 100% of people should agree on, right?
Should.
Of everybody has in their head, like, something they would ban, right?
Yeah.
I mean, unless there is the absolutist out there, there might be that case that, sorry if I'm maybe an ultra, I could see somebody thinking that, but I'm just talking the most part, I guess, walking it from there and going, okay, is there something that you think ought to, and then where's everybody else's line? And that's where this whole conversation is. And then when it comes to the localities, it's community that bring complaints. And then when it gets to national government, at least here in the U.S., and we can talk globally again, but here in the U.S., the federal government, there's this book ban you're talking about, not allowed in schools. It's not produced nationwide. It's more localities. Yeah. It's this school district.
And even then, you take the most obscene book that is actually fully removed from schools, and goes. That's one thing, and then even local libraries can remove it. Even that far, it is still purchasable. For the most part, even most obscenity now won't actually match all three of Roth's law, because generally you can have, there will be some degree of artistic value that someone will see in it. It's now so specific that it's very hard to actually ban a book under obscenity laws now, like actually nationwide. States still probably could do it. I just don't see too many states actually pursuing that.
Hmm.
But those laws are still on the books, and it's very difficult to do.
I
can see a case in which some states could ban a book like Fourth Wing. I could see it. According to current obscenity laws, I could see the argument. I doubt it'll actually work through. And at this point, I don't think anyone's making the effort to do so. But those laws are still in the books. So I find that interesting. The laws that are the things that are technically legal and yet not actually actionable, or not actually exercised, I mean.
I would never want Fourth Wing banned for the pure reason of I enjoy my community and not fire everywhere. Because immediately, Fourth Wing's banned. There's chaos in the streets.
Oh, it's, no, yeah. Our little wing of the internet is rioting. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that violence. No, I don't want that smoke.
We went to the National Book Fest, and we were in line seeing, I think we were in line for The Expanse or something. I've never read it, but mm-hmm. I've heard of those, James S. A. Corey. Still haven't read the books yet. That's on the to-do list. But
on this podcast. We haven't read that yet.
We're trying our best.
We're doing our best.
We're doing a book review every week, if you guys have noticed. Every single week, we've been doing a book review. It's fun.
It's not our fault that we're reading not your book that you want us to read. Sorry.
We're working on Memories of Ice. It's right now. Rich is literally listening to the audiobook while we're talking.
Oh, you damn bastard. Don't give him hope.
No. It's like the reason we wear these headphones is so we're not even listening to each other. There's earbuds
also in here.
In here, so we are always reading.
So you were asking us why we're so scatterbrained. It's that.
Yes, exactly. Why we can't pronounce things is because we're listening to our head like Seth Zon von Villano. That's constantly going, okay, where was I going with that? Where'd that all start?
Fourth Wing book banning.
We were in line for James S. Corey. Very long line. We were probably in there for what? Hour or two? Shout out to Jeff.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. Shout out to Jeff. We met
him in line there,
yeah,
and then also met him again at Dragonsteel.
Yes. Is he going to the gala? I have to double check. I don't think he's going to the gala.
No, he isn't. It's unfortunate. Yeah. I believe he is coming at some point through DC. I was talking to him the other day, and so.
But we were there, and our line was long, but the Fourth Wing line to see Rebecca Yarros, because Rebecca Yarros was there. It looked like a concert was going on the other side.
You just see a sea
of people. The horizon. Like, I became a flat earther for a moment because I'm just going, I don't see the curvature. I just see a line of heads that just kept going. And so I went over there to see where the line ended because I was just curious, where does this line go? I went to ask a person, hey, is the line then here? They go, I don't know. They were like in tears going, I think so. We don't even because Rebecca Yarros only had so much time. So I kept going. Nobody even knew where the end of the line was because the line was just everywhere. The building was the line. Anyways, that's my experience with the fandom there. So they're very passionate.
Yeah. This is all in the frustration. I don't know about you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get a little perturbed of when you go into a Barnes & Noble theme, like mainstream bait, like that is the place to buy books?
Yep.
And you just see a table of like banned books and you look at it, I'm like, I can buy that book though.
In my head.
These are the banned books. I'm like, but it's right there. I can buy it. It's not banned.
When
someone's like, it's 1999. Ooh, 1984. It's super secret. It's like, ooh, it's, you know, edgy. Or Clockwork Orange. It's so edgy. You're reading a banned book. They don't want you to read it. I'm like, ugh. Like, those aren't.
It is banned for those who don't have $9.99.
Apparently.
Conveniently
go to a goddamn library.
Patron plug.
Which is also conveniently the same price, $9.99. Is it $9.99?
No, it's $10. It's actually
$9.99.
It's $10 on the dot, actually. Because we didn't want to.
You can't. If you go $10.99, like 99ths of a cent, then you have to round up because you can't.
Go on.
$9.99.99. You can join our book club where we talk about books.
Yeah.
And you guys get to decide which, and democracy's cringe, but you know, we listen to you and we'll read the book that you guys vote for every month.
We are forced to read whatever you pick and talk about it with you. And Yes.
Yeah.
That's.
Hey, you might as well join now. I don't know however much longer that exact system of governance is going to last.
Also,
I feel like exercising. I feel like it's just great foreshadowing of how much, you know, democracy is cringe. Why do we have democracy on our own server?
That's
a question I ask myself.
Well,
every day.
We're sometimes good monarchs because on the server, I've been told from other booktubers, our server it's 18 plus, by the way, because it is rather obscene. You see how we talk on the podcast. It's the same vibe, but actually, no, it's dialed up because it's dialed up. It's worse.
It's worse.
Yeah, it's worse. So
we've tried. We've tried. To,
no, we haven't.
We tried a little bit.
No. No. I'll give you
There were some people that tried to make Morning Glory Milking Farm a thing.
It still is a thing.
It is still we've reined that back a little bit.
No, we haven't. It's everywhere. Is this just your alter ego just hoping?
I'm hoping.
All right.
I'm
coping.
I'm sorry.
But that is a thing where imagine the Discord is a small government or locality like that.
Yeah.
We've had to ban very, very, very few people over the
relatively
span of everything.
Speaking, yeah.
Like the admin team, right? We get the reports, we hear whatever it is, that decisions made, right? And so it's very, very rarely, but it's because there's some, again, what's your line? Mm-hmm. What kind of community do you want to craft? And that's us in a very,
well, that's
us on the internet as a community for books. So it's different.
It's definitely a question around the overall topic of banning books. And like, even in our small Discord, there are lines you cannot cross. There's stuff to not be talked about. Or like, there are social guidelines around everything. So
there's even guidelines for how books can be pitched because we're fantasy. Like, we're not going to have nonfiction.
So
just because of what our channel is.
Scaling that up to a country or civilization. Every civilization has their obscenities. Every civilization has their heresies, and not just religious. Like there's I won't go into just, but every civilization has their heresies, their obscenities, things that are taboo.
Yep.
It's why I find like the whole idea of like completely open, like everything should be allowed, nothing should be, restricted of any kind of pie in the sky ideas of like, that's not how any civilization ever has worked in all of history. There are societal rules around things. So it's about arguing I think the best argument is talking about where should the fences be rather than we should have no fences.
Yeah, establishing like, hey, is there at least one thing you wouldn't like? Are you the absolutist? I don't know if you mentioned at the beginning the ADL, Anti-Defamation League. I don't even know do they go far enough to say literally everything? They could, but I don't want to put any statement on their platform or anything.
Oh, however, I apologize. I did say the wrong acronym, the ALA, American Library Association.
Oh, you might have said ADL.
I probably did.
I think you did.
I messed up.
Oh, okay. We messed up a lot this episode.
Real late into that, but whatever.
Yep.
The American Library Association every year does like they list off all the banned books, and by banned they mean books that have been challenged to the school boards. Yep. Like basically people or organizations like saying, hey, this should be banned, which again, sneaky numbers. I don't like how they do their statistics of they count challenges, not actual successful removals. So they count like, oh, this book had like 2,000 challenges, and yet it was still kept in, like it was challenged and then rejected and kept in the library. Yet it's still counted as a ban. That's whatever.
Also,
that's,
Nick, if you could put an asterisk and put AL, the other acronym.
I'll send it to you. It's fine.
We'll do that just at the beginning of the episode. Because who's making it an hour and 8 minutes into this?
Nobody.
Come on.
Yeah.
Well, we can't say that anymore.
Yeah, that's
true. We really can't. See, the thing with the channel, too, is the things we could say about the channel have changed over time. Because it used to be very honest of saying, hey, who's watching over an hour in? And now there's plenty of freaks that do.
There are.
It's pretty cool.
There's plenty of weirdos out there that they'll actually listen to the whole thing. Or, they're having dinner, a very long dinner, and we're just in there We're in the background.
It is really strange to think back on that because when
hope you enjoy that meal.
Yeah. And that car
ride. Get
some
dessert.
What do you want them to get for dessert?
I think they should get a banana split. Nobody gets a banana split. Everyone likes the idea of a banana split, but no one goes out and buys a banana split. But they're always happy when they get one. You should go get a banana split.
You should go to an Olive Garden and get the chocolate mousse cake.
Ooh, that was good. I remember that.
Yeah.
It's been a good time. Any final things with book banning and books?
Oh, lots, but we're not going to get to all of it. So
yeah, that is true.
No, I'm just going to have to cut it off because it's a lot. You covered a lot of the stuff I didn't look into, which was awesome to hear. I have...
I have a list, just so many.
I went into so World War II. I went into Japan. I went into the Civil War. Was kind of neat to look into what happened. Anyways.
Uncle Tom's Cabin was banned in the Confederate States as well.
That came across.
You know what? I do love how it was banned in 1952 and...
1852.
Thank you. 1852, and that did not last long.
Oh yeah, did not last long
that
at all.
That banning
yeah.
did not stick.
Well, that's
because we kicked their asses. That's the point I was making.
Well, that's the thing too is the book banning and the longevity of them. What were you just saying? Shit, I had a thought.
I was referencing that. The banning of Uncle Tom's Cabin did not last very long because we kicked the Confederates' ass.
That though is the argument as well about the book banning that we didn't mention is book banning itself brings more attention to the books. The whole Streisand effect of like not lasting for the fact that Confederates lost, but and the fact that you ban a book or the nine you list, the ten you list. I even felt a little uncomfortable when mentioning the book, the bombing book. It's like the more attention you put to something that could not that you're promoting the thing, but even mentioning it could lead to just more eyeballs or, oh, that's banned. I must read it. That's why you have the whole banned book section at Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. When you walk in and see that, you then go, oh my God, it's banned. I should read it because it gives you that, oh, I can't have it. That means I should read the thing or you're not allowing me to. It's the simple thing with kids. You can't have alcohol. Well, kid's going to probably want to sneak out. What's this dangerous thing that I shouldn't have? Mm-hmm. Or smoke a cigarette, whatever it might be. The taboo is interesting. It's mysterious.
Yeah. No, it's a fine line to draw. Like it also goes down to the theory of laws and how you actually make them effective. Like there is a danger to making, if you make laws that people do not respect and will ignore, you run the risk of making other laws that actually should be respected not respected anymore. So if a government is making laws on a bunch of silly things, then you start not following the actual serious laws. So you have to be very careful about what you actually make illegal. You better be careful, better be sure, and actually stick behind it rather than this loosey-goosey junk. That's something. That's a different channel. That's a political theory channel.
We covered so much.
Yeah.
We talked about all of history ever.
I'm so excited to see the comment section on all the things I got wrong, especially the ALA in the very beginning of fucking that up. So
let's see if people did notice that.
Who knows? Maybe people are idiots and know less than me, which I don't know if they could. It's a low bar, but
I think this was a very fun episode. I
enjoyed it.
I learned a lot. And
let us know if you want us to go into other details. I'll have a lot of fun researching and talk about stuff with you.
Yeah, so I hope we did. I know we did focus a lot on the U.S. stuff. I should have maybe brought up a few more of the global things. Things that will stick in my head that you mentioned was the whole obscenity laws and how that functions. Another one, Mickey Mouse is just still sticking in my head too. Man, what a that. And I like the C.S. Lewis thing that I looked into. I never
that
knew
was
that.
I didn't know that either.
So, at the end of each episode, we'll refer to the highlights so it could stick in your brains. Maybe that's a good way. Good way to remember some things. Let us know if you know anything about the conversation, what your thoughts are. This was another, this was a good time. Good time. Hope you had a good time. We'll see you all next episode.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.